All right, so today we're going to dive deep, really deep, into a Supreme Court case that's had a kind of huge impact on voting rights, especially when it comes to how our local governments are set up.
Yeah, this one's a biggie. It's Holder v. Hall, and for all you law students out there, consider this your crash course on a landmark election law decision.
Perfect. So, like, what's the big question at the heart of this whole thing? What were they even fighting about in Holder v. Hall?
Basically, it boils down to this. Can you actually challenge the size of a local governing body, like, say, a county commission, and claim it's diluting the voting power of minority residents under Section 2 of the VRA?
The VRA being the Voting Rights Act, right?
Yeah.
But this wasn't just some theoretical legal exercise, was it? This came from a real place, a real situation.
Absolutely, yeah. It all started in Bleckley County, Georgia. They had this system where they only had one single county commissioner, and this had been going on since way back in 1912.
Wow, one commissioner for the whole county. That's different.
It is. And Bleckley County has a significant Black population, making up about 20% of the voters there. A lot of them felt like this single commissioner system basically shut them out, made it much harder for them to elect someone who actually represented their interests.
So, like, their votes didn't really count as much as they should have, right?
Exactly. They felt their voting power was diluted, which is a key concept we're going to unpack more as we go.
Okay, so that sets the scene. So what we're trying to do in this deep dive is first we're going to break down all the legal arguments that went back and forth, figure out what the Supreme Court ultimately decided, and like what does it all mean for how we understand the Voting Rights Act, you know, how far it reaches, where it stops.
Exactly. It's about the scope and the limitations of the VRA and how Holder v. Hall shaped that.
Cool. Cool. So let's start by zooming in on Bleckley County. It was a single commissioner system for, what, like 100 years, right? So what were the Black residents claiming was wrong with that, legally speaking? How are they using Section 2 of the VRA to make their case?
So their argument hinged on Section 2 of the VRA, which basically says you can't have voting practices that discriminate based on race. And that includes anything that dilutes the voting power of minority groups. Their point was that having just one commissioner for the whole county elected in a countywide election meant that even though they were a decent chunk of the voters, their votes were basically swamped by the majority.
Because everyone's voting for just one seat.
Right. In a smaller district, their votes would have more weight and they'd have a better chance of electing someone who represents their community. So their solution was they wanted to switch to a 5-member commission with each commissioner elected from a separate district.
So more localized representation, the idea being that they'd have a real shot at winning at least one, maybe more, of those districts.
Yeah, that was the thinking. They figured in a smaller district, they'd have a numerical advantage or at least be more competitive and have a voice.
Okay, so they took this argument to court. What happened? Did the courts just say, yeah, you're right, let's switch to 5 commissioners?
Not so fast. The legal journey was actually pretty twisty. So first, they went to the district court, and the district court actually ruled against them. Said they hadn't really proven there was vote dilution happening.
Really? Even with the whole one commissioner for a county thing?
Yeah, the district court wasn't convinced that alone was enough to prove a Section 2 violation. They often look at a bunch of factors, you know, like the history of voting in the area, whether voting is racially polarized, stuff like that.
So it's more complicated than just looking at the structure itself.
Exactly. But then it went up to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and they saw things totally differently. They reversed the district court's decision, said, nope, this single commissioner setup does violate Section 2. And they even kind of hinted that a 5-member commission might be the way to fix it.
So round one to the Black residents, basically. But then it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, right?
Yep, to the big leagues. And here's where it gets really interesting, because the Supreme Court actually overturned the 11th Circuit's ruling.
No way. So after all that, the Supreme Court said, you know what? The size of a governing body, it doesn't matter under Section 2.
That's basically what they said. The Supreme Court, in a plurality opinion, which means more justices agreed with that opinion than any other single opinion, but it wasn't a majority of the justices, they said that if you're challenging a voting system under Section 2, you can't just go after the size of the governing body.
Like, that's off limits now.
Pretty much. And the reasoning behind that is really important because it has big implications for how we understand the Voting Rights Act.
Okay, so let's break that down. Why did the Supreme Court say you can't challenge the size of a governing body?
Why?
What was their logic?
Their main argument, which you see laid out in Justice Kennedy's plurality opinion, is that there's no clear standard, no objective benchmark to measure if the size is causing vote dilution or not.
Wait, how do you decide what the right number of commissioners is? 5, 10, 20?
Exactly. The court was like, there's no neutral way to figure that out. It's like saying, how long is a piece of string? You need some kind of ruler, some unit of measurement to answer that. And they felt that just didn't exist for the size of a governing body.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Different places have different sizes for their governments. You can't just pick a number out of thin air and say, this is the fair number.
Right. And the plurality was basically saying, look, courts aren't supposed to be making these kinds of decisions about how governments should be structured. That's more of a political question for the legislatures and the voters to figure out.
So it's like they're saying, we're judges, not political scientists or government consultants.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of that in their reasoning. But here's the thing. It wasn't a unanimous decision. You had some justices who agreed with the outcome but had different reasons for getting there, and then you had a pretty strong dissent.
Oh, yeah. The Supreme Court is rarely unanimous on these big, impactful cases. So let's go through those other opinions. What was Justice Thomas's take? I feel like he tends to have a pretty distinct viewpoint on these kinds of issues.
Yeah. Justice Thomas, along with Justice Scalia, they filed a concurring opinion, meaning they agreed with the result, but they wanted to go even further. Thomas basically said that Section 2 of the VRA should only apply to stuff that directly stops people from voting, like poll taxes or literacy tests, things like that.
So he's saying vote dilution, the whole idea that a system can unfairly weaken someone's vote, even if they can technically cast a ballot, that shouldn't even be part of Section 2.
Yeah, he called the whole concept of vote dilution unworkable, said it just doesn't fit with what the VRA was originally supposed to do. So for him, the size of the governing body was irrelevant because he doesn't think Section 2 should even cover vote dilution claims in the first place.
Wow, that's a pretty big difference of opinion. Okay, so we've got Justice Kennedy saying no benchmark, so no challenge. We got Justice Thomas saying vote dilution isn't even a thing under Section 2. What about Justice O'Connor? Where did she land?
So Justice O'Connor agreed with the outcome. You know, you can't challenge the size of the county commission in this case, but she actually disagreed with the plurality on how Sections 2 and 5 of the VRA relate to each other.
Okay, reminder for everyone. Section 5 was that part of the VRA that required certain places with a history of discrimination to get federal approval, pre-clearance, before they changed any of their voting laws.
Right. And the plurality was basically saying, just because a change might have needed pre-clearance under Section 5 doesn't automatically mean it's also a problem under Section 2. O'Connor was like, no, I don't agree with that distinction. She thought both sections should cover the same kinds of voting practices, but she still agreed with the judgment in the case, mainly because of that same lack of a benchmark problem.
So different reasoning, same conclusion. Interesting. All right, but we can't forget the dissent. What did Justice Blackmun and those who sided with him have to say?
Okay, so Justice Blackmun, he wrote the dissent, and he was joined by Justices Stevens, Souter, and Ginsburg. They were not happy with the majority's decision. Their main point was that there actually are benchmarks you can use to judge the fairness of the size of a governing body.
So they're pushing back against that whole no objective benchmark argument.
Exactly. They said, look, other counties in Georgia have multi-member commissions. Even Bleckley County itself has a multi-member school board. Why can't we use those as a comparison?
Yeah. If it works for schools, why not for the county government itself?
That was their argument. And it kind of gets to this idea of substantive representation, meaning it's not just about being able to vote. It's about having elected officials who actually reflect and fight for the interests of the people they represent. The dissent felt like the majority was basically inventing a new restriction on the VRA that Congress never intended. They were worried this would make it much harder for minority voters to challenge discriminatory systems.
So they're seeing this as a step backward for voting rights.
Yeah, they were sounding the alarm, basically. They thought the court was being way too cautious, too hesitant to step in and protect the right to vote, even when there's evidence of unfairness.
Okay, so we've got all these different opinions, different interpretations of the VRA, different ideas about the role of the courts. There's a lot to unpack here. Let's try to break down some of the key legal concepts that are at play in Holder v. Hall.
Sure, yeah, let's do that. So first and foremost, you've got to understand Section 2 of the VRA. This is the heart of it all. Basically, it says you can't have any voting practice or procedure that denies or limits someone's right to vote based on their race or color.
And that includes more than just like directly blocking someone from voting, right?
Right. It also covers things that lead to vote dilution.
Okay, so let's define that. What exactly is vote dilution?
So vote dilution happens when a voting system, even if it technically lets everyone vote, ends up minimizing the political influence of a particular group, especially minority voters. It's like their votes don't carry the same weight, the same power as other votes.
Could you give us an example of that? Like, how does vote dilution play out in real life?
Sure. So imagine a city with a large Black population, but they're spread out across different neighborhoods. And the city has at large elections for city council, meaning everyone votes for all the council seats, not just for the one in their district.
So it's like one big election for the whole city.
Yeah. And if the white voters in that city are mostly united in who they want to vote for, they can easily outvote the Black voters, even if the Black community has its own preferred candidates. That's a classic example of vote dilution.
So even though they can vote, their votes don't translate into actually getting their people elected.
Exactly. And that's what Section 2 of the VRA is trying to prevent.
Okay, so that brings us back to this whole benchmark issue that the court was so focused on. They're basically saying, with the size of a governing body, you can't point to a clear standard and say, this size is fair, this size isn't. But the dissent was saying, look, we have other counties, other systems, we can use those as a comparison. Why didn't that fly with the plurality?
Well, the plurality felt that just comparing different systems wasn't enough to create a solid legal rule. They were looking for something more fundamental, more inherent to the idea of what makes a governing body's size fair or unfair. Just because one county has 5 commissioners and another has 10 doesn't automatically mean one is right and one is wrong.
Yeah.
They wanted a more objective principle to go by, and they just didn't see it.
I guess it's like, yeah, you can compare, but how do you decide which one is the right comparison? It gets kind of subjective.
Exactly. And the court, especially the plurality, they're really wary of getting into those kinds of subjective judgments. They see that as venturing into the realm of politics, which they want to stay out of as much as possible.
So it's a matter of judicial restraint. Like, this is for the legislatures to decide, not for us.
Yeah, there's a lot of that at play in Holder v. Hall.
You also mentioned Section 5 earlier, that whole pre-clearance thing. How does that fit into this whole picture, especially since Justice O'Connor had a different view on it than the plurality?
So, Section 5, as we said, it was this really powerful tool in the VRA. It basically said that certain places with a history of racial discrimination in voting had to get the federal government's approval before they changed any voting laws.
It was like, you've got a bad track record, so we're keeping an eye on you.
Exactly. But the key thing about Holder v. Hall is that it kind of separated Section 2 from Section 5. The plurality was basically saying, look, even if a change to a voting system might have needed preclearance under Section 5, that doesn't automatically mean it's also a violation of Section 2.
So they're saying just because you need permission to do it doesn't mean it's automatically discriminatory under the results test of Section 2.
Exactly. And Justice O'Connor, she disagreed with that separation. She thought both sections should have the same scope, cover the same kinds of practices, but she still agreed with the overall decision, mainly because of that lack of a benchmark problem.
So it's like, yeah, maybe they should be treated the same. But even if they are, this particular case still fails because there's no clear standard to judge it by.
Right. So Holder v. Hall kind of muddies the waters a bit when it comes to the relationship between Sections 2 and 5. But the big takeaway is that it definitely limits the reach of Section 2, especially when it comes to challenging the structure of local governments.
Okay, so we've got these different opinions, different interpretations, different views on the role of the courts. It's a lot to take in. What are some of the big overarching takeaways from all this? What should people, especially law students, really focus on when they're trying to make sense of Holder v. Hall?
I think one of the biggest takeaways is just how divided the court was on this issue. You've got some justices who are very hesitant to get involved in what they see as political questions about how governments are structured. They want clear, objective standards, and they're worried about overstepping their bounds.
Like, let the people decide kind of thing.
Yeah. But then you have the dissent, who are much more concerned about ensuring fair representation, even if it means the courts have to get a little more involved. They see the VRA as a tool to actively combat discrimination, not just a passive set of rules.
So it's a debate about the role of the judiciary in protecting voting rights.
Exactly. And it's a debate that's still going on today, especially with all the recent Supreme Court cases that have reshaped voting rights law. Holder v. Hall is a key part of that story. It shows us how the court is grappling with these really fundamental questions about democracy, representation, and the balance of power.
And for law students specifically, I guess it's a great example of how statutory interpretation works, how you take a law like the VRA and try to figure out what it actually means in practice, how far it goes, where the limits are.
Absolutely. It's a classic case study in statutory interpretation, and it's one that has had a huge impact on the real world.
Okay, so big picture.
Yeah.
If we were to sum up Holder v. Hall in like one sentence, what would it be? What's the key takeaway?
I'd say the main takeaway is that the Supreme Court put a significant limit on Section 2 of the VRA. They said you can't challenge the size of a governing body under that law because there's no clear, objective way to measure whether that size is diluting minority voting power.
No benchmark, no case.
Pretty much. And that has had a lasting impact on how voting rights cases are litigated, how advocates think about challenging unfair systems, and ultimately on the shape of our democracy.
So that brings us to our final thought for you all to ponder. How might legal strategies for achieving fair representation in local government evolve in light of Holder v. Hall? If you can't go after the size of a governing body under Section 2, what other options are there? What other legal arguments could be made? And what are the chances of those being successful? It's a tough question, but it's one that's worth thinking about because the fight for equal voting rights is far from over.
It's not just about legal strategies either. It's about political organizing, community engagement, and making sure the voices of those who are often marginalized are heard. Holder v. Hall might have closed one door, but it doesn't mean the fight is over. It just means we need to be creative, strategic, and persistent in finding new ways to achieve the promise of a truly representative democracy.
Well said. And that wraps up our deep dive into Holder v. Hall. Thanks for joining us, and keep those legal minds sharp.
Thanks for having me. Always great to chat about these important cases.